Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It gives me great pleasure to introduce George Glass, who will be delivering the afternoon's lecture entitled In a Realigned World, the Future of Measuring Accounting. George is the 31st MARG Distinguished Lecturer since Michael Bromwich established the conference in 1979. During the last three decades, other holders of the Distinguished Lectureships have included luminaries in the world of accountancy, such as Sir Michael Peet, Professor Anthony Hopwood, and Professor Wim Vandersteady. There's no doubt that our speaker tonight fulfills the pioneering role that MARG requires of its Distinguished Lecturers. He's currently finance director of UCM Timber Group, timber explorers, exporters, importers, and agents, where he's responsible for all aspects of the group's financial and information systems. A graduate in mechanical engineering, he joined the UK paper division of Reed International as a production engineer. He then went on to train as a management accountant with SEMA. After qualifying, he worked as deputy chief accountant in Reed's largest UK paper mill, and subsequently became divisional systems controller. He joined Butterworth Publishing as IT director, where he was responsible for an extensive systems upgrade program and the development of a worldwide communication network at a time when the World Wide Web was a mere twinkle in the eye of Tim Berners-Lee. George then moved to Haymarket Publishing, a company that was spearheading the introduction of IT into the magazine its publishing process. As IT director, he was responsible for the wholesale replacement of typewriters and drawing boards with desktop systems. He subsequently assisted in the early development of web-based publishing. George represented the UK on the IT committee of the IFEC on behalf of SEMA and KEB from 1998 until it wound up in 2002. As well as coordinating the UK's responses to various international IT initiatives, he held overall responsibility for IFAC's publication, A Director's Guide to the Evaluation and Selection of IT Projects. He also presented paper on SEMA's views of the management accountant as a champion of corporate information management at IFAC meetings in Bangkok, Dublin, and Lahore. Ladies and gentlemen, I invite George Glass, Deputy President of SEMA, to give the 31st MARG Distinguished Lecture. Thank you, George.
Thank you very much. I feel extremely honoured to be here. I also have to admit to have only been parachuted in the last 2 days. Charles Tilley, our Chief Executive, is sitting on the wrong end of a volcanic cloud, so I'm afraid he can't be here. He sends his apologies from the wilds of New York. And if I trip over his words, it's because I haven't learnt them all verbatim yet, but I'm working on it. So, the whole question of where is management accounting going? The world is being realigned. How are we going to realign ourselves with it? Now, that's a good start. The management accountants in the financial crisis, one of the big questions when you look at what's happened recently is the fact that the blame for the recent crises has been levied, first of all, at the auditing profession and then at the bankers and at banking, the regulators as well. Yes, it's rather nice we haven't been on the receiving end of the blame, but on the other hand, does that mean our profile's in the right place? Are we really that relevant? We know that our work in the future of management accounting, that many leading companies are already well on the way to transforming their finance functions to be more efficient, to be better at supporting decision making. This transformation has included developing finance professionals and deploying them as finance business partners across the business. The big challenge we were talking about in the earlier lecture about stopping them going native is one of the big issues on the other end of that. But on the other hand, you've got to go native a bit in order to really get into the works of what's going on. Bankers have devised innovations to improve returns on capital, increase the returns reported to shareholders. This meets society's demand for credit, provided the bank clients with higher investment returns. They reported huge profits, they generated value for the shareholders. The remuneration was performance related, so they were quite happy to work to get bigger and better bonuses. Eventually, the house of cards collapsed, and we all know what happened. But who were the bank's corporate navigators? Accountants, one of the things that we consider as management accountants, one of our roles is to challenge what's going on, to challenge established wisdom, in order to say, is this really as robust and as firm and as consistent with really where we're going, of really generating long-term value, rather than just trying to sort of bolster up the figures in the next few weeks. In many organizations, accounting trainees are seen as the cream of the organization's intake. The one exception to this is in banking. Investment banks' trainee programs are aimed purely at getting in the best people to work in the banking end of the business, not in the business of being management accounting, of actually providing the management information for control. And I think that what we have seen is that there is a big difference between the support role, which we would think is our space, and the frontline bankers, who are seen as the elite. But we all know they were also called the smartest guys in the room. And the smartest guys in the room had quite a lot to do with Enron. The Walker Review suggests that non-executive directors need to be better informed and become more engaged. How can decision makers in any organization maintain a keen understanding of its competitive position, its drivers of value, potential risks, even its fundamental economics, its revenues and its costs? Non-execs can never be close enough to the business to specify the information needs nor to influence the management's operational decision making. It is not within the scope of the role of a non-exec, neither is it realistic for him to try to do it. Management accounting has evolved to meet organizations' needs. The crisis has highlighted the need for finance to take on a broader role, not just supporting the business, but applying professional objectivity. We need to ensure that risk and performance are managed on the long-term interest of shareholders. The stakeholders and corporate navigators should be custodians of the long-term business model. They are charged to ensure the sustainability of the business in the long term. As management accountants, we should welcome the challenge to take on this broader role. It would advance the science of management accounting, perhaps not in terms of new quantitative techniques, but much more importantly in terms of its influence. Where progress towards finance transformation has been slow, the need to adjust to the longer term economic impact of the recent credit crisis could provide the burning platform necessary to get some buy-in to this change of what we think we need to do. In this post-08-09 crisis world, everyone's hoping for a brighter future. But it may not mean a return to business as usual. The economic conditions and the hubris that gave rise to the crisis were not sustainable. The future is not as it was before. We can't just turn the clock back. Management accounting has always evolved in response to business needs as the world has changed. Credit crisis provides an inflection point. Businesses need professional objectivity that management accountants can provide to ensure that risk and performance are managed in the long-term interest of the stakeholder. There will be some global rebalancing. Economies with surpluses will be less inclined to fund consumer debt in the more developed economies. Confidence in free markets and the ethics of big business have been rattled. There's no doubt that the world order has changed dramatically. Regulators and business leaders are trying to improve risk management, but in some cases this is very difficult to confuse from total aversion to any form of risk and very tight regulation. More regulation and an emphasis on governance is inevitable. However, what we need to do is to make sure that that regulation doesn't end up just creating another straitjacket to stifle everything. Statutory reporting requires greater transparency, and I think that one thing we can be certain is that XBRL is going to start to move in that direction. There's a huge amount of excitement around how can you make sure the XBRL is consistent, and I think there's a very long way to go before that's going to really start to come together. The theory is great, the practice is going to be a lot of hard work. Credit is not going to be easy to get, nor is it going to be cheap. It's very difficult to see how the demand for credit is not going to lead to fairly dramatic increases in interest rates, just in order for governments and economies to even keep themselves going. Paradoxically, the great late 20th century love of credit and living off credit has turned rather sharply on its heel. A lot of people now spend their life fearing debt. This means they're much more price sensitive, but they will also be questioning the value of buying things just because they are a particular brand. Emerging economies are going to face reduced demand from their traditional consumer markets. Their currencies will appreciate, and the difficulty then is that they will then lose the cost advantage, and that will immediately affect their ability to sell even on their home market. I think in a realigned world, spending is going to be more closely aligned with income. Global surpluses and deficits will tend to be things which will ease away. Remuneration structures will have to be revised. The interests of management and shareholders will have to be much more closely aligned to make sure we don't get this happening again. The future will continue to change. I think one of the things that was said some time ago was the one thing we can be certain of in life is change itself. If we consider that a little while ago we were talking about the challenges to be learned from the gearing levels achieved with private equity, suddenly that's gone out of fashion. We hope that we've reached a stable equilibrium. What guarantee have we done? Do we think that we've done that? I think it's very unlikely. I think there's still a long way to go, and in what direction is very difficult to say. Globalization and free markets have lost a certain degree of credibility, still regarded as the best way to generate wealth, but there's the risk that a loss of faith in those free markets and a fear of distant competitors may cause some to lobby for more regulation and much more protective policies within countries. Pace of change may be slower, certainly slower than we saw in the dot-com boom, but there's a credible case for there's no credible case for resisting the advance in information and communication technologies. We can't avoid it. It's going to happen. So what we've got to do is to accept that the world is going to become more e-enabled and work on how to get the best results from that. Some of the multinationals already have more turnover than some nation states. Globalization and advances in technology will enable the scale and complexity of businesses to continue to grow. These are more challenging to manage, and it's more difficult for the regulators to control and to provide the level playing field. Globalization and the advances in technology will also enable new competitors with new business models to create new markets, challenge long-established incumbents in mature markets. Demographic changes, including aging and declining population in some wealthy countries, and the implication for social welfare, consumer spending, better educated workforces in emerging economies, will increase their capacity to generate wealth, but rapid population growth is also going to present its own challenges. From our own perspective, liberal democracy and free market capitalism has proved to be a better way of generating wealth than providing freedom of choice, but many countries have different value systems. And disparity in wealth can cause resentment. Some developing countries are experiencing social and economic conditions similar to those that gave rise to socialist movements at the beginning of the last century. If this is going to happen, we've got to be aware that the pendulum can continue to swing in terms of the way different countries work. And I think there is very strong evidence that some countries which have attempted to adopt a more totalitarian approach are finding it very difficult to sustain. Climate change is another issue. It's been described as a failure of the market system because it shows how the price mechanism doesn't reflect the full cost of what goes on. There are big arguments about the science of climate change, but the one thing that you can be certain of is that we live in a finite world, and the demands that we are placing on that world are in danger of outstripping supply. What are we going to do about it? That is not a long-term sustainable model. The future of business. Big challenges for the private and public sector. We need more effective boards, better management, and really powerful finance teams in place. The fall in demand due to reduced consumer and state spending is going to lead many companies in developed economies to divest and focus on their most lucrative products and markets. Some companies would be weakened, providing acquisition opportunities. Many facing lower demand in the traditional markets would be looking for new opportunities elsewhere. The public sector in the developed world already faced the challenge to deliver more for less due to changes in demographics. Governments cannot raise taxes significantly in the current climate for fear of making the economies uncompetitive, and therefore they've got the double whammy of low rates of tax levied on low rates of income, which can be taxed. Greatest growth opportunities in the developed world's vast market of newly affluent consumers, there are cost reduction opportunities here too. Inputs can always be sourced at a lower cost, and I think one of the big impacts of the globalization of communications technology is that a shared service center can be moved from one center to another very quickly and achieve a substantial wage arbitrage gain by doing it. And as far as the end user is concerned, it doesn't matter where the service comes from, as long as that service is delivered to the quality and to the place where he wants it. Companies with the best prospects are those that can balance reducing operating costs with investing to continuously develop their competitive position for recovery and beyond. The public sector is going to have to balance the delivery of outputs required with the investment to prove the efficiency and effectiveness of the future. Maintaining this balance is a key to success, and I believe management accountants have a key role to play in helping achieve this. It's worth remembering that management accountancy was born out of change itself. There is a debate as to who was the first person to do any management accounting, but there's a very interesting example of Josiah Wedgwood, who is one of the people who is credited with starting the game. They'd been making pots of a particular type for a very long time, and they were doing very nicely, thank you, until suddenly the market turned, and everybody wanted a different shaped pot. And he found himself looking at more and more pots because he carried on making the wrong ones. So he had to sit down and do some pretty simple costing by our standards and say, that's not the right way to do it. I've got to do something different. How am I going to do it? There are a number of other examples from that time. So it goes right back to the early stages of the Industrial Revolution. However, the real driver, and the driver which caused SEMA to be formed, was the situation of the shortage of labour immediately following the Great War. And Lord Leverhulme and six other industrialists sat down and said, come on guys, we need to focus on management information. This is not statutory accounting we're talking about. This is information which is necessary to drive the business. They'd all worked on a cost-plus basis up to that point. The whole of the war, everything was done on cost-plus. Great. But of course, after the war, you are trying to meet the market demands. You've got to match your price is going to be what the market's prepared to pay. So they introduced costing and variance analysis. And really, management information and cost leadership is the still key part of our role now. 1987, the world was changing again. Johnson and Kaplan published their seminal work, Relevance Lost. They argued the world had changed. Financial accounting and cost analysis developed for manufacturing were no longer relevant for the new service economy, where intangibles, especially brand, were more significant to value creation than the historic cost shown on the balance sheet. SEMA by then, of course, had acquired its Royal Charter, already developed its syllabus in response to employer demand. And it's worth remembering that SEMA's syllabus is revised every 4 to 5 years, and a very large part of that revision is driven by the demands of the employer. As accountants, we might be inclined to think that advancing the science has to do with developing new techniques. But over the years, it's been evident there's a great need to increase the influence of management accounting, as there is to add new analysis tools to the toolbox. Focus on management, focus on value creation and cost leadership, not just on counting the pennies, but also on how to do the job better. So, we've got a bigger and better toolbox. As life goes on, more things turn up. One of the challenges is to decide which tools to use. That box has got rather more in it than any one person can use, but deciding which are the right tools to use is the real challenge. We've got spreadsheets, accounting tech software, performance management suites, increased business intelligence, all the good crunching tools which we've lived with for a long time. But we've also gone and looked in other areas. So we've got the tools borrowed from other disciplines, microeconomics, business process re-engineering, total quality, Six Sigma, Kaizen, change management, project management. And one or two people have even gone into the areas of operational research, statistics with regression analysis and game theory, and one or two people even gone into the issue of real options in finance. Developments in the actual toolbox within the management accounting space include such things as activity-based costing, balanced scorecard, benchmarking, lifecycle costing, target costing, managing for value, strategic cost management, and reference class forecasting for large-scale projects. We've got all the tools, but we don't use them regularly. They're kept in the bottom drawer and sort of pulled out when things start to get complicated. The work that we've been doing with a large car manufacturer, the team doing a large car manufacturer in this country, has shown that actually the people who are using the best, this is an organization where the accountants are embedded in the project teams. But when you look at the work that's being done by the project teams, the best tools are being used by the engineers, not by the accountants. They're using them for accounting type activities. Management accounting has its root in cost analysis in the manufacturing industry, but it's had to develop and transform in response to the needs of employers. Advances in techniques have added to the accountant's toolkit, but using them all the time makes him less relevant as number crunchers. For many years, we've been trying to shift the emphasis from cost to value and from quantitative analytical techniques to qualitative management skills. And this is a challenge to anyone because the assumption is, oh, you're an accountant, all you do is numbers. But have we achieved greater influence? I don't think we have. We're still seen as the scorekeepers. And the scorekeeper, by definition, is sitting on the sidelines. He's not participating in the game. Are we happy to be sitting in the score box, or do we want to be out on the field of play? I think that we are still seen as financial accountants. Traditional accountants, I think, are very comfortable in the back room. They'd much rather sit in the back room in the comfort zone rather than get out into that rather dirty world where you are competing with people on a much more equal basis. And I think that the response to the previous crisis has not helped any accountant's credibility as partners. We may not have been the ones that got it in the neck for Enron because we weren't the auditors, but it doesn't alter the fact that all the accountants got tarred a bit with the same brush, and have we really sought to underline the difference? What we need is a navigator. We should be the navigator. It's not just a matter of saying where have we been, but it's saying where are we going to go. And if you look at the way that navigators operate on most ships, they don't sit in the bowels of the ship watching the engine going round. They tend to sit up the top watching the world go by. They've got a lot of instruments to tell them where they are. They've got a lot of instruments to tell them a lot of things, but they still have to have a look out the window occasionally to decide where they're going and make sure they are going in the right direction. You've got to look at all those things together and then discuss with the skipper how he's going to get through this particular situation. We have the skills to do it. We have the ability to think long term, but we need to hone our risk management skills, and I think we need to develop the participation on risk management with to give us the credibility to be the risk managers. We can explain the current position, talk about the strategic threats and opportunities, put the courses together, and forecast the potential outcomes of the different routes. One of the important things is to make sure that we have got a proper voice on the board. There is little point in doing all this in the back rooms and in the lower echelons of the organisation. It has got to be done at board level, and we have got to have that credibility. This is something of a hope, because there will be a next time. The question is, what will the next time be? And I think the only thing we know is we don't know what it'll be. I think if anybody had predicted Enron from .com or predicted the banking crisis from Enron, they would have been using an extremely sophisticated crystal ball or just extremely lucky, and I think probably the latter. One of the things is to make sure that whatever we put in place is something which is relevant in the good times, but is there to support us in the bad times. Enterprise governance. We need to balance the management of performance and conformance and develop longer-term planning horizons to ensure sustainability. We are more and more driven by the need to conform, but the danger is if you work too hard on conformance, you will not deliver long-term performance, because there must be innovation to achieve that. Cost leadership. There is pressure to increase efficiency through investment in systems, through standardization, centralization, and continuous business improvement. That is always going to be the case. We need better information. Stakeholders and decision makers always want better information, and the more information you give them, the more they want. One of the challenges to us is to ensure that we give the right quantity of suitable quality information, because quantity does not equate with quality. I remember many years ago when a new computer system was put in the days when, this was in the days when it came on music ruled 11-inch paper, and the sales director said, "Oh, this is great, I can see exactly what I've done, and at the end of the month, can I have all the reports?" So the IT department duly delivered him 6 boxes of listing paper, each this big, and he went out and played golf. We've got to make sure we deliver small quantities of information, which is the information that is needed, but we've got to ensure that it is well supported, that you can drill into it, that you can ask the questions. But you need a good dashboard to start with. We need to be more influential as navigators. There's a real need to cascade the strategic implementation, performance, and risk management through the whole business to ensure it's run in the long-term interest of the shareholders, balancing the current performance priorities with sustainability of success in the long run. The management accountant's role comes in a variety of different places now, spread right across the finance function. Many people find their training and credibility as professionals equips them to achieve career progression beyond the finance function. I would say slightly in my own case, engineer, IT director, I'm actually now working as a finance man, but it's been fairly late on in my career, quite frankly. The finance function has to produce the management accounting information, the analysis, that's its core role. It builds on historic financial information produced by standard accounting systems, and it provides more insightful and forward-looking information than purely financial reporting. As transparency increases, there's a need for more transparency in statutory reporting. Some of the management information starts to get reported externally. The main purpose is to support the business in investment appraisal, cost control, and risk performance management. And I think it's worth remembering that the danger of too much management information ending up in statutory information is that you're confusing two completely different things. We know that finance is becoming ever more efficient. The dreaded term silent running creeps in. The idea of, I can understand lights out computing. What I can't quite understand is lights out clerical staff. But that seems to be the concept they're talking about. Fewer and fewer people, greater expertise. The more work that can be done without people having to shove bits of paper around, the better. But this requires a lot of attention to business process improvement. The finance director sits at the top there. Overall responsibility for finance. He's a board member, he has fiduciary responsibilities as well. He's got a crucial role to play in the enterprise governance, and it's where the board must be effectively connected to the business so that the board direction for strategy, risk management and remuneration is cascaded consistently across the business. SEMA developed the strategic scorecard partly in a response to the issues surrounding Enron and WorldCom. The feeling was that did we actually understand what the real role of the board was? And the danger is, As Enron discovered, the smartest guys in the room can be motivated by their own self-interest. And by the time you discover that's what they're doing, it's a bit late to pick the bits up. Somebody has got to be there as a counterweight to balance that motivation with the long-term interests of the organization. Accounting and finance function is a very important part of providing this role in the framework, so that senior management, directors, investors, and regulators are informed about key performance and conformance issues, so they can provide the necessary oversight to protect the stakeholders' interest. The strategic scorecard can be used for this purpose. It focuses on the external environment. What are the changing needs of the business? These drive the options to address the needs, and how we implement the options we decide to undertake. Strategic risks relate to why we would fail to meet the needs of the business. And it prompts decision makers to ask a number of important questions. Do we understand our business model? What are the circumstances under which it would fail? And are we happy with the risk mitigation? There's also, I think, a very big question of, yes, we're happy with our business model until we discover the bit that's missing from it. How good are we at spotting that missing bit? Do we as an organization spend enough time discussing strategic issues? Do we have a workable process for overseeing it? And do we have the right information? A lot of organizations are still going through the process once a year rather than having a living document which they will come back to on a much more regular basis. It becomes embedded in the organization's routine processes. How well are we focused on the long-term sustainability of the organization? What do we mean by long-term sustainability? Do we understand all the risks that we're taking? Do we have a healthy, ethical, and thoughtful culture that encourages constructive challenge from anywhere in the organization? Is remuneration really aligned to strategy and delivery? And do we have effective collaboration between the board and the management? Those of you who know Charles Tilley sufficiently well will know also that it is his family who made the Tilley lamp. The Tilley lamp was a paraffin-fueled lamp which was extremely popular, particularly during it was developed during the First World War, but it was popular right through into the Second World War. But of course, oil lamps have just disappeared. They made an interesting mistake because they decided that the future, when electricity started to come along, the future was gas. And you have to remember that in the 1920s, gas was produced as town gas. So it was not compressible. We did not have what we now have as, you know, liquid butane, whatever it is. So curiously enough, the Tilley lamp died because it backed the wrong material. But the ideal material for its solution came along after it had died. So don't be ready to pick up something and say, right, I've got the answer, and then discover that the technology has moved on. But similarly, just make sure that you've thought of these things. Do you understand the risks? And a lot of the biggest risks relate to things which the elephant is so big that you don't even see it in the room. This is another little image, navigating the enterprise. What you have in the middle there is an oil tanker. It's an oil tanker because it takes quite a long time to turn around. Most major changes happen incrementally over a long time. Most businesses' planning horizons tend to be little more than 18 months for budgeting and 3 to 5 years for strategic planning. Is that really long enough? I'm not sure that it is. If you look at significant business failures, hindsight will show that the risk which destroyed the business had been there for a very long time, creeping up on it. I think some of the ones which had happened more recently happened much more quickly in the case of people like Lehman's and Northern Rock. But Marconi was a classic example of an organization that didn't realize the world was changing and it got left behind. Greg Hackett of Kent University suggested that the first and most important reason why companies fail is that they miss the colossal external change, undetected risks that risk the survivability of the business. So, we're talking about a radar which we are using to say how far in the future do we need to be thinking in all the different directions on the radar screen. Is our tanker heading in the right direction? Or is it heading for the rocks? Can we see the rocks? Where is the nice, deep, open water that we should be in? This can only be done, really, by the management accounting, putting together the right planning process, and continuously reviewing that process. Governance must be handled at board level, but it also needs to be an engagement all the way down through the business to cascade all those issues down to the points where they actually become real. Traditionally, we've always said the first place where management accountants can be expected to contribute to improving performance management is in cost control. But I think that if we think that that's where the world is going to end, that's where our world is going to end, it certainly will. We've got to recognise there's a lot more to it than that. Cost leadership. This is the Hackett Group figures on the amount of the cost of transaction processing in median and world-class organisations. And you can see that the way that it has moved, the world-class organisations have continuously driven down their transaction processing costs. The median have plateaued, and they've been sitting on that plateau for quite a long time. So there's still a challenge there to a lot of people. It's easy to say some of the prices, some of these things are outside the company's control. So it means that there is a key to profitability of managing cost. Finance function must be close to the business operations to understand the processes, and the commercial acumen must be there to continue to review the efficiency of the operations and manage down the costs of those operations. But what you mustn't do, of course, is lose the service, which is fundamental to the organisation. There have been organisations which have cheerfully driven their cost base down so far that it has failed. There have been classic examples of organisations who have offshored their telephone call centres way outside the country to very cheap sources of labour, but also because it is a very heavily consumer-facing organisation, it is important that when the individual customer rings the organisation, they can talk to somebody they can understand. And these organisations, some of them have now brought their call centres back into this country and put them into the areas of the country where the accent is most acceptable to people in this country. But the same thing's happening all over the world. There's no point in saying it's cheaper if I can do it in country X if the quality of spoken English in that country means that the customers are all going to walk away from you. It's a challenge to us all, building a sustainable value chain to balance the operating efficiency with longer term prospects. Challenge is to cut costs so to improve efficiency, but still invest enough to continue to develop the firm's competitive position. The late Sir Brian Pittman, who died recently, chairman of Lloyds Bank, was a very early advocate of shareholder value maximisation. But he certainly didn't have a short term approach. He noted that the challenge was to deliver superior returns while at the same time investing to build what he called a legacy for the future. Recent research confirms that management accountants know instinctively. Business can cut costs to improve operating efficiency, but invest more in their competitors than their competitors in marketing. R&D and capital expenditure are likely to be the most successful as they emerge from the recession. As we come out of recession, you're going to have some reason why it makes sense for you to be there ahead of the opposition. The narrative, the success stories and the failure stories are narratives about characters, insights, plots and tactics. They're not communicated in the form of financial reports, but as narratives. Financial accounts report outcomes. They don't describe current performance or the risk along the firm's value chain, nor do they provide leading indications of future performance. So we need better information. Strategy mapping links metrics that describe the company's strategic direction, through performance measures through to financial outcomes. The range of data assembled and assembled by management accountants to provide management information has expanded to include operational and external metrics. These can be leading indicators of performance, risk and progress towards improving the firm's competitive position and the achievement of strategic intent. One of the things is also to ensure you are handling the right piece of information for your business. The finance director of a major UK carpet retailer found that analysis of house sale completion was the most reliable indicator of the carpet sales market over the coming months. That was how he built his model. I think one of the things we don't know, as we mentioned before, is XBRL. XBRL should provide better information. The danger is, are the regulators going to try to use it to regulate in a way which will make it much less attractive, and people will then be reluctant to publishing anything more than the absolute minimum. As management accountants, we can help ensure that the decisions are properly framed so that relevant information and evidence is considered and assessed against the right objectives of the shareholders. With business intelligent tools, wide range of data can be captured systematically. You can then do much higher value analysis and what-if modelling. There's always the chance to harness new opportunities in technology. And I think this is where we should all remember, look at the technologies, look at the tools that they give you, and don't just go and take the one out of the box as provided by your standard BI or Microsoft provider. Look at it a bit more creatively and say, what do I really want for what I'm actually doing? The challenge to us all is to get out of our comfort zone. We're all happy as management accountants to sit at the quantitative skills end, doing all the crunching, because that's the place where we know more than anyone else, and therefore they can't challenge us. But if we're really going to make it work, we have got to get out there and add value. And adding value is about qualitative skills. It's not about being able to produce the numbers, it's being able to say what they really mean in this particular situation. What is it that we're actually interested in for a particular purpose? And I think that this is the journey that we've all got to travel along. And particularly, I think there is an interesting challenge, as we were talking earlier, about the issue of people working in shared service centres. How are we going to encourage people, equip people even, to get from the quantitative end to the qualitative end? Because there is a big gap in the middle of opportunity. We want to be more influential. We should be more influential. The CFO of Cable & Wireless says that much of what he would like to do, much as he'd love to do it, he can't sit alongside every business manager. But ideally, they should be provided with the right management information and incentivized with a remuneration model so that they will operate the shareholders' interests as though he was sitting right next to them. This chart shows really the journey we should all be following. We no longer consider ourselves scorekeepers. That is a job which can be done much more effectively in other places. The next stage as a supporter was really holding the hands of the management team in various different places. But we're still internally focused. The real challenge is to get to the point where our real focus is on adding value for the stakeholder. And that is every stakeholder, whether it is the employee, the shareholder, the customer, the supplier. They are all stakeholders in the organisation in their own way. And it is in each of their interests for the thing to be maintained in order to give them the value, the long-term value for what they do. So, management accountancy has got to continue to develop to meet the needs of our employers. We have a realigned world, and businesses will need corporate navigators, management accountants who can combine financial expertise with business understanding. We have key roles to play to help organisations survive in the crisis and thrive as conditions improve. We must ensure that good governance at board level is provided, and that more information, more informative external reporting to regulators and stakeholders is made available. These have to be put in place before we've got to get them there first. They don't exist. The management accountants have a key role to play here in providing a planning framework and to develop a better understanding of the longer-term planning horizons. Cost leadership is essential for survival. Again, we have the ability to achieve the balance between improving operating efficiency and investing in developing the firm's competitive position. the balance will improve companies' chance of success after the recession. It's also worth remembering this is particularly crucial in the public sector. There is a massive challenge in the public sector as things move forward, and there are a number of interesting cultural challenges within that as well. Better information is always going to be required by regulators, shareholders, external stakeholders, as well as the decision makers. Technology will always provide access to more data. We still have that key responsibility of making sure the information is the right information, organised in the right way for the particular problem of the business. We've also got to work to get our influence better into the right places. We need to complement the activities that are obvious with the need to engage management accountants as influential business partners, objective professionals who can support and challenge, and who can improve the risk and performance management and guard against the next time. We already have the necessary tools. The challenge is to be engaged by the businesses to play the role. Management accountants need to gain more influence and become more relevant to sustaining business success. Great opportunity for management accountants. And when we've reached the position of corporate navigator, the management accountant's role will be questioned when the company hits the rocks. We will try and make sure it doesn't hit the rocks. But if we are actually in the driving seat, which is where we think we should be, then it would be relevant for us to take the blame. Thank you. I'm happy to take a few questions, as long as you haven't all fallen asleep. But on the other hand, the bar's nearly open, so perhaps you don't want to talk to me.
Any questions?
I think one of you would like to know
what XBRL. XBRL. Are you familiar with XML? All right, that's XML. XXML. I'll take several steps back. What it's about is it's a web technique for tagging information, so that instead of you receiving, if you can consider a database, in a normal database, you've got a series of columns. Each column's got a different thing in it. And so there's the gross cost, the profit, the whatever it may be. If that's organized as data, each piece of data has got a little label attached to it which says what it is. So it says, this is the gross profit, this is the revenue, this is whatever. And these tags are attached to the information and then put into a huge file. And the tags are defined as within the scope which is described by XBRL. For those that are probably several know far more about it than I do. But the principle of XBRL is that it is a means of standardizing how you share information. Some of you have probably submitted your tax returns online. And when you hit that button which says send, the whole of your tax return is converted to XBRL and sent to the revenue. You probably didn't know that and probably didn't want to know it, but XBRL, extensible business reporting language. The idea is they're trying to extensible business reporting language. XML is extensible markup language. They're all come back from the original notions of markups in the way web publishing works. But there is an intention that all company accounts will have to be filed in XBRL within the next 2 years. It's quite soon. A lot of excitement about it.
Just what, former Amboss University of Hertfordshire.
Sure.
Just wondering, as a profession, as management accountants, do we really have a plan to move ourselves out of the back office, away from being scorekeepers and supporters to navigators? Do we as a profession have a plan?
I think as an institute, we are working to encourage people to realize where they should be. And I think that the reality is that a lot of our members have already made that move, either because they are finance directors or they're marketing directors or they are holding board positions in quite a diverse range of areas. So we're already doing it, but we're not very good at promoting the fact that we're doing it. It's probably the best way to describe it. And I think we are seeking with our, certainly some of the developments within our CPD programs as well, is to encourage people to understand that we have got a lot more techniques than back office techniques. There are various organisations I've spoken to where they, I think when you can start to embed your accountants as business partners, they begin to change. We've mentioned the problem that they're going native, but it does alter the relationship because suddenly you become part of the team. I did a presentation to Network Rail on business partnering. They practice it quite heavily. And my closing slide was, there were two pictures on the slide. One was a traditional picture of three people sitting around a computer terminal poring over ledgers. And the other one, because it was Network Rail, was a bunch of people laying a set of points. I said, which pitch are you playing on? And the interesting thing was that I did the presentation twice. The second time I did it, they gave me a different slide. And the different slide they gave me was actually a real picture of real management accountants working for Network Rail at their training centre laying railway lines. And they actually make a point of saying, no, we push people out there, we embed them there. And it means that they contribute far more to the business. And that's the way to sell the service. There's no point in coming along and saying, you know, I'm the finance director and I'm going to run all these other things. What you have to do is it's got to cascade right through the organisation, and often it's easier to bring it up from the bottom. So you build your teams. Jaguar Land Rover do this. They embed their accountants into the project teams, and the cross flow of information, the behaviour between them, after a while, as they said, you can't actually work out who the accountant is any longer. Yeah.
It's very important for the future of management accounting.
Mm.
What about other things like innovation, like customer satisfaction as well, like rehabilitation, the society? I think the maybe conflict between them and the constructive leadership so much is important for the future of the contract.
I think they're all very important, but I think that probably the biggest one of the biggest challenges to us at this time is really centred around re-establishing trust. I think there is an expectation for us to be, you know, there's an assumption we're going to be ethical, and actually trying to ensure that that's embedded into the culture of the organisation and the culture of the management accountant is always going to be a challenge, because as long as you stay in the back office and just do the number crunching, then it's not particularly important. But once you start getting into the position of driving the business much more, you have an obligation to make sure that that driving process is an ethical process. And I think, if anything, that's going to be, you know, one of the... there is a big demand for an increase and improvement in trust. It's coming across every part of the profession, not just management.
Yes, I'm Juhani Vaivio from the Aalto University School of Economics in Helsinki, Finland. Sort of, if you excuse me for playing the devil's advocate here. So, I think the idea of management accountants being more involved with business processes and being navigators and so on, it's a very interesting concept. But there's a problem that's a huge challenge to their identity and role, and it's quite a challenge to also the identities and roles of other managers and other professional groups within the organization. Like, I remember hearing this comment in one event that from engineers in a company. You know, the last thing they wanted was a management controller or accountant becoming involved in their projects, because they just drive a different mentality, for instance, in project development initiatives and so on. That is the financial mentality meeting an engineering mentality, and there's quite a tension between the two. How would you comment this kind of...
Well, I think I would probably go back to what I said about Jaguar Land Rover, because they have discovered that their project teams always have embedded accountants, management accountants, and they're always management accountants. And they tend to be, they will start doing that fairly early on in their training. And therefore, there is a degree of, I suppose what it really is that there is a relationship developed at the early stages of the development of the project teams, such that everybody understands their role and they accept the complementary nature of those roles. And after a while, they actually start to spark very well off each other. And the engineers will start challenging the accountant, and the accountant will start challenging the engineer in a way which is very constructive for everybody. I think the thing which you will not get a success is if there's an established purely engineering project team, and suddenly you say, oh, you need a scorekeeper, because that's just seen as a block, it's a total sort of brick wall being stuck in the way. You have to ensure that you develop the trust, the understanding, the dialogue. And the challenge to every body in that arrangement is realizing that, yes, you may be the specialist in the subject, but it doesn't mean you're the only person that knows anything about it. And being effectively challenged. I find occasions somebody asks me a question from... you know, sort of left field type question, you think, where did that come from? But you realize that it's an extremely useful question. But you have got to have a relationship where when those sorts of discussions take place, it's not seen as a threat if that sort of curveball comes in. And I think it can be done, but it requires quite a lot of, it's a lot of work. You can't just parachute people in.